It has been a year since the terrorist attack on the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, and the community is still recovering from the horror. But the attack has faded into the background for many people across the country, and this is a problem, according to Colin Clark. He's a senior research fellow at the Soufan Center and an adjunct senior political scientist with the RAND Corporation. Colin has spent his career studying terrorism, insurgency, and criminal networks, particularly in the Middle East. For him, the attack on the synagogue, which was just down the road from his home, was a wake-up call to the real threat violent white supremacy poses. I spoke with him more about it recently, and what that day was like for him and his family 1 year ago.
It was very confusing. I woke up, it was actually the first day that my wife was back at work as a nurse from maternity leave, so I was watching my girls. And I was a bit overwhelmed. And so I had my hands full, and then I started getting a flurry of text messages coming in asking if I was okay. And I said, yeah, of course I'm okay. What's going on? And quickly realized I should turn on CNN. And much to my surprise, I noticed cameras less than a mile from my house in front of a synagogue. Clearly something terrible had happened. And it was the early moments, so still trying to figure out exactly what.
So you say, you know, once all of this unraveled and it was revealed what had happened at the Tree of Life Synagogue there, just, you know, right by your house, you say that this is the thing that made you look at domestic terrorism and white supremacy, which is a little ironic, right, because you study terrorism. Why do you think it took this? Like, why do you think it took a shooting like this happening right by your home?
Yeah, well, I'd always focused on jihadist terrorism, right? And so Al-Qaeda and Islamic State and groups that we talk about as transnational terrorist organizations. And surely there's a domestic element to that, what we call homegrown violent extremists. We'd seen Americans inspired by the Islamic State launch attacks in San Bernardino, California, and Orlando. But, you know, this different flavor, this different ideological motivating factor of violent white supremacy had been something that I didn't really pay much attention to. You know, maybe that's because I'm a white male and these are people that look like me. I don't know. I've been doing a lot of introspection and kind of figuring out how I missed something so big. I thought about groups like the KKK as relics of the past, whereas, I often viewed groups like Al-Qaeda as the kind of current threat. In reality, it's both, right? We have this such a trouble with nuance in this country, and we tend to look at things as very binary. It's either this or that. But actually, it can be multiple things, and in this case, it really is.
Yeah. So what is the scope of this? You write that the threat of white supremacy is now impossible to ignore. How extensive is it in this country?
It's extremely extensive. We've got groups that have been around for a really long time, groups like the KKK, which still exist, and the Aryan Brotherhood, but we've got a whole raft of new groups like the Atomwaffen Division and the Rise Above Movement, RAM, which are building transnational links to white supremacists and neo-Nazis in Ukraine, in Eastern Europe, and throughout the world. And if you just look at the data, in 2018 alone, white supremacy extremists were connected to 50 murders, to include the Tree of Life Synagogue. And that was more deaths at their hands than at any point since 1995. Where Timothy McVeigh bombed the federal building in Oklahoma City. Mm-hmm. And there's also differentiations, right? There's white supremacy. There's also what we would call this kind of broader umbrella, which I think McVeigh fits into, which is radical right-wing extremists, right? They may not be racist, but they're motivated by anti-government beliefs or other kind of conspiracies.
Why do you think this is something, I mean, you said you've been doing a lot of introspection for yourself on this, but why do you think it's something that we didn't think as much about as a country and we started to see more and more of this kind of violent activity from these groups? Do you think it's something we all thought was in the past, or like we just, it's easier to demonize the other who lives somewhere on the other side of the globe?
I think there's a lot of different factors that contribute to it. One, I think it's absolutely easier to demonize the other. Right. And if it's someone that doesn't look like us, the offense becomes that much more grave. I think that we did think things like this are a relic of the past. I often viewed terrorism as something that happens out there. Right. Mm-hmm. When we think of dangerous places, we think of Yemen and Somalia.
There is some momentum around this now, right? The conversation seems to have shifted. Like, you're not the only one who sort of realized that this was more of a problem than we had thought. What is the conversation like now? What kind of movement are we seeing toward change?
Yeah, so we're moving in the right direction. There's more hearings on Capitol Hill. We hear lawmakers and policymakers talking about the threat more. We see that the Department of Homeland Security has called out specifically violent white supremacy as a major threat And in the past, that wasn't the case. It was often only given kind of one or two lines, almost as an also-ran. But now it's elevated to the same level as the global jihadist movement, which I think is the right thing. And so these conversations are happening, but there's still a resistance in certain circles to call it what it is. It's become a little bit of a political hot button issue. And I think that's why I go to great lengths to call this violent white supremacy and not use that broader bucket of, right-wing extremism, because that's that kind of tars people on the right wing of politics, which isn't what I'm suggesting.
What do you think could be done in terms of policy to combat this or to bring it in the open to know more about it? Where do you think we begin?
So I think we need to start designating groups that have links overseas as transnational white supremacy extremist groups, as foreign terrorist organizations. And that's something that the Canadians and the Brits have done. And what that does is that allows the State Department and Treasury to deny members of these groups entry into the United States, to block assets of those individuals and groups, and to prosecute them for material support. And that's something we haven't been able to do, heretofore. I think a big part of it is we just haven't uncovered those transnational links. And, in my work for the Soufan Center, we produced an in-depth research report on this subject, where we actually map out these networks and we show the links to places like Ukraine and elsewhere. And so the evidence is there. The FBI, I have to give credit where credit is due, has been one of the organizations that has really been on top of this. But in our daily life, how many people are reading FBI indictments? Not many. I mean, I am because I'm a researcher. So they're there. They're tracking these threats. For some reason, the media hasn't kind of picked up on that. And that's another thing we're hoping to do is draw more media attention to force our politicians to take a stand on this.
That is Colin Clark, Senior Research Fellow at the Soufan Center and an Adjunct Senior Political Scientist with RAND Corporation. Colin, thanks for coming on the show to educate us all about this.
Thanks so much. I appreciate you having me.